Gone fishing.
News Talk 1400 WOND welcomes you to Shep on Fishing, a program tailored to bringing the latest news and tips on the world of fishing to your front door, as well as disclosing the area's hot spots for finding that large catch. Whether you're an expert or novice, Shep is guaranteed to reel you in to this popular sport.
Rocco, you're calling early this time.
Good to have Robin back in the saddle. Hi, Robin. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Rocco.
Good morning, Rocco.
Got some news from Margate, Marvelous Margate. On February 7th, the Margate Commissioners meeting, we learned that the Margate Fishing Pier down there at Exeter Avenue, they call it the Angler's Club, but the Margate Fishing Pier, believe it or not, don't fall off your chairs here, but the Margate Fishing Pier has been having discussions with the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, that's the DEP. It looks like they're going to extend the pier by 125 feet. Before we start applauding here, keep in mind, Army Corps built up the beach there, and it got washed away within a matter of weeks. But the Margate Fishing Pier is typically high and dry most of the
time. Very often.
Here's the caveat why the New Jersey State, the DEP, is going to be paying for that extension. The pier has to have some level of public access. This project should start in October of 2019. The city of Margate has some concerns about liability, but there's some big news there about the Margate Fishing Pier.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, but you're right. that was a private club. As far as, I've always known it as a private club, but you're saying that now it has to go public a little bit because they're getting public money?
Well, indeed, it is a private pier, but in order for it to be extended with the state paying for the money, of course, the state is
same thing happened
our
with
tax
pier.
Dollars, your tax dollars.
Yeah.
But yet, it looks like the state will force them to be making it publicly accessible for portions. The landward side of the pier would have to allow for public access.
Yeah.
As the Army Corps pumps more sand on
I'm
the
sorry.
Beach. But, I mean, is this going to be an ongoing project now? Look at Wildwood.
Well, it's really interesting because the whole reason why, I guess, the state acquiesced and say, listen, we'll lengthen the pier is because not only was that pier always high and dry, often, especially during low tides, but I guess they felt bad for the anglers and they said, listen, we'll extend the pier. But all that sand that was re-nourished 2 years ago in front of the Margate Pier, all that sand got washed away, and that's down there clogging up all the inlets and making the Wildwood beaches longer. But let's just hope that this longer pier, because as you know, it's not easy to build a pier or to lengthen a pier in the state of New Jersey. Of course, up there, up the block a little bit in Ventnor, that pier, one of the longest in South Jersey. It's a 1,000-footer, the Ventnor Pier. I think you know that, Shep.
Yep.
Even though we love piers, there's not an awful lot of great fishing going on for some strange reason. It doesn't seem to be the biggest place to catch the big ones, huh?
No, mostly they fish for kingfish, spot, those kind of things. Occasional striper, nice bluefish once in a while, big sharks. But, it's not really known for consistently big striped bass or anything
well,
like that.
Well, the whole surf fishing South Jersey has
right
been destroyed with beach replenishment, so, fishing piers having the same problem as the surf guy.
Yeah.
Now, how can we get them to feel as sorry for the anglers in the bay and dredge that out as they do for the anglers on the ocean?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
do we do there? That sounds like a...
Well, there is some good news. It looks like because Ocean City was given a little more time to dredge out their docks and marinas, there are those in Margate that feel that the DEP might be a little nicer and allow Margate to start dredging out those areas, especially around your bait shop and your rental business, Robin, because as you know, all that silting is really hurting the business of marinas in the back bays of Margate.
Yeah.
And it's a navigational hazard. I mean, they can always hang their hats on that. It is if they indeed want navigation and fishing in the inland areas. If they would like it to just appear to look like a fishing village with absolutely no fishing, then they're on the right track there without doing anything. But they really want the industry to survive and thrive and families to be able to get out there, then they need to do something like pretty quick.
All right. Well, thanks for that news. That is actually news, Rocco. So thanks
it's
for calling.
It's not very often where we hear good news about fishing piers and access points because, Bill, always talks about the diminishing access points to fishing. Let's see if the extension of the Margate fishing pier will increase the interest in fishing off our coasts.
Could be. Very cool, man.
You know, I just read this week where Middle Township is searching funds to increase their those obsolete bridge piers that they shut down over the last couple, 3 years.
Yeah.
The Avalon Pier, and I think there's one in Stone Harbor they were trying to get funding for. So, you know, maybe things are
looking up. The Avalon Pier is similar to the Margate Pier. It's a club. It's like a private, or has been in the past, private
club. The Margate
club,
yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like the, I mean, the Avalon Pier is like the
Well, this is the inshore Avalon Pier. This is at the Avalon Manor. Where the old bridge used to be,
They
used to be a fishing pier.
Oh, all right. Yeah,
and they
the
shut
there.
It down as a safety hazard.
Oh, okay.
And they shut the one down in Stone Harbor as a safety hazard. And I just read where Middle Township now has applied for funds to rebuild those.
Are you talking about fishing from the bridges that are in existence?
No, they're the old bridges. Okay. It's what's left of the old bridges
on
here.
On the side.
Yeah. Avalon Manor is right there by the marina, the old bridge there.
All right.
About the regulations we had at in 2018 that are going to stay the same. The Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission's met on the February 5th, and they said basically no change, so expect that. What the states can do is play with the dates the CBESS opens and adjust some of
so there might be some changes there.
Fishing area, May 6th or whatever, and 12 and a half, that type of thing. But I expect it to stay the same with some adjustments internally. But most likely, the season will start at May 25th. Last year, it was timed for Memorial Day, so this way, the 25th is on a Saturday, May 25th. The Memorial Day is the 27th, so this way it's time to have the guys and gals to go out and do some fishing. Everybody's pent up from the winter, so that's expected for sea bass.
Now, last year it was on the 15th, right, the opener?
No, it was the 23rd.
Okay.
May 23rd. For fluke, there's no regulation set now because of the shutdown. This screwed up the schedule when the ASMFC and MFC could meet. But they're scheduled to meet around March 6th, March 7th, and the expectation is that we'll have a liberalization and we'll get a slight increase in our quota. I hope most likely the season will stay the same, I think, but possibly have an extension, say early open up earlier and close later. So this way, the Bay people could have it earlier season and go into September, so you get to get the bigger fish. That's what it looks like. It doesn't look like we'll get a sloth fish, because if you have a sloth fish, say it's 16 inches, you want to catch more fish, and then this way the season will be cut shorter. We have to stay within those type of regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't expect a sloth fish to happen, but an extension of our fluke season, either earlier or later or both. So
is that a good deal?
We're waiting to see what happens with that. The striped bass is not that looking that good. We're waiting for the stock assessment. From earlier indications, it seems that the fish is being overfished, and probably we might have the regulation is going to be changed not in our favor. That's to be determined. I mean, we're catching, it seems that a lot of, even though people are catching these fish, and these regulations are set to, with the getting a fish over 43 inches and one up to 43, people are releasing the fish, but when they're releasing the fish, a number are not handling them right, so there's a lot of fish dying.
Yeah.
And it seems the stocks are down. So that's the negative on striped bass, and I've kind of seen it in a way. And I fished a lot for striped bass and Leonardo, and they used to be in for quite some time, but now they come in and they're gone, and it seems to be a very, very short season for
striped. Where do you fish?
Striped bass. That's what's going on with the regulations.
Let me ask you a question. Where do you fish? Where do you fish out of?
Oh, I fish all over the place: Point Pleasant, Belmar, Leonardo, Massachusetts, Block Island.
Oh, cool.
So I'm all over. I want to touch on something very quickly.
Sure.
The Jersey Coast Angler Association on the November 11th of 2018, we had the speaker, Mike Pantone. He's a new administrator for the Northeast region of NOAA, and he's a so-called big cheese in what's going on with the fisheries. And we had him as the main speaker at our dinner, and he is a local boy that fishes that grew up in the Manasquan area. So we have somebody in NOAA who knows something about fishing, and a lot of people don't. I mean, I'm talking about these regulators. A lot of them don't fish; they just follow fishing models. But I was impressed about what he said, and I sent a letter to him, inviting him to set up a round table discussion sometime in 2019 to have members from the recreational community and talk to them about our concerns. Now, in March, in April 3rd of 2017, we had his predecessor named John Bullard, who was no friend of ours, recreational fishing.
Wow.
And he had a similar, he had the round table, and we impressed upon him, and says, look, the sea bass situation is terrible. The data we have needs to be changed. It's terrible. We were told that we caught a lot of fluke right after Sandy when all of the boats were destroyed. I said, we have to change the data for collection. And another thing, too, which is major, is that the businesses are going out because of these being destroyed by these regulations. Something has to change. And how can we work together to change this? So we give us a roadmap to work with you, but we didn't get any kind of response from him, and so very disappointing, but I hope to accomplish something with Mike Pantone. Now, given the partial shutdown, I haven't heard from him yet, but I'm expecting a letter, hopefully, to say to set up a round table. Now, there's a number of people. Last time we had, there was like 30 or 40 in the room.
Cool.
So I'm hopefully optimistic that we'll have something in this year to air our concerns.
Can we get a representation?
Where we go with that.
Can we get somebody, a couple people from down here, represented on that roundtable?
Well, they set up the invitations. I don't know how many, who they're going to invite, but there's like the RFAs there, the JCAA. Different club people that's represented throughout the state. I don't know. I never got a list of who came. In fact, that meeting was not even recorded, but I recorded it as far as my notes go. I also want to touch very quickly on windmills.
That's a favorite subject around here, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: what's going on with
go ahead, windmills? What's the position?
A couple of meetings. I'm very. I'm following this very closely. To me, this is a very, very interesting project. First of all, the windmills, they're going to be placed around between 17 and 20 miles offshore. I mean, first of all, the driving force is our governor, and he wants by 2030 to have 3,500 megawatts of electricity by these windmills. Now, as I said, they want about 17 to 20 miles out. Basically, people don't want to see them. So when you put them out 17 to 20, you might get a glimpse of them, but you're not going to see them that like up front and close. Also, when you send them out that far, they're less in the path of bird migration. So the killing will be less. Instead of like if you had them inshore, like 3 miles or 2 miles or 5 miles or something like that. The positive part is okay, increased power, and it's not the fossil fuel thing, but there's downsides to it.
How about fishing?
Well,
one of
the major things we have, before I go into the downsides, one of the major things as far as recreational anglers is, can we fish by them?
Yeah.
Now, that's extremely important. They with these windmill structures, they set up a reef. Now, on Block Island, they have five of them up there. There's five that's huge. And I talked to some, I was fishing up there, and I talked to some of the mates on the boat. Says, "Oh yeah, they attract a lot of fish. So it's they're artificial reefs, all of them. But these windmills, and then by the way, they might be as high as 800 feet. 800. Now, to give you perspective of that, the Freedom Tower in New York City, it's almost half the height. It's huge.
Yeah.
See, the higher you go, the windmills become more productive. Okay, they increase more energy, and there's going to be a lot of them. They're talking about 400 of these things.
Maybe
it's going to take a large hunk of the ocean to set these things up.
They're right off our coast.
Yeah, they're going to take a lot of them. Now,
so good. Is this good or bad?
Both.
Both.
Both. To answer your question.
Yeah.
Let me give you the good part. As I just mentioned, it's. It's no fossil fuel. It's extra power. Some of the downsides, and there's a number of them.
I was thinking more of how it affects the fishing.
Well, here's the thing. They affect a couple things. Whales are very sensitive to noise. Fish are very sensitive to noise, period. And it seems to affect whales more than any other species. But as far as the other species, we're talking, everything. It seems that the lines have electromagnetic force that they seem to possibly affect fish migration patterns. Another thing, too, is, though, think of it, from 17 miles out or 20 miles out, you have to have lines, power lines. They have to go into the shore somewhere, some infrastructure where there'd be like a power plant that would distribute this power from all of these windmills out to land users. But in doing so, you have to, these lines, they go down to about 6 or 7 feet. So this way they're not hit by ships or anything else. So when you're ripping up the ocean from 20 miles out and you're going down 6 feet, that's a lot of structure to rip up.
What do you mean go down 6 feet? Do you mean 6 feet off the bottom or 6 feet under the water?
I'm 6 feet under.
Okay.
Sand.
You have to have 6 feet under.
6 feet under the sand. Lines. Okay. Yeah.
So that's going to rip up a lot of the structure. Now, the more you rip, you rip up the ocean floor, you're disrupting the habitat. I mean, it's that simple. Also, this, when you say noise, you have to have power driving to put these windmills down. If you have a windmill, it's about, as I just told you, if it's up 800 feet,
yeah.
You have to make sure that thing is anchored properly. So you have to power drive down to do that. The other thing too I'm kind of aggravated about is that some of these proposed sites are over very good scallop beds. The commercial people are at this meeting, and to me, they said, "Well, this is where we want to put the windmills." Wait a minute, why destroy somebody's livelihood? And also, this is clam beds too, so. Why not move these windmills to the left or to the right or up and down so that you don't destroy these scallop beds? These are traditional. And they don't seem to be one of changing that, which I find puzzling. They're putting people out of business. That's their livelihood, for generations. It's destroying a food source. I mean, you're not supposed to destroy something to create something, is what I'm trying to say.
And scallops are a big industry in this state.
Why destroy a food source Why destroy? And this is where we get our scallops.
Right.
Why destroy Hootsworth to put up a windmill? Move it. And I there seem to be what we're gonna do is compensate them. We're gonna compensate them. Why? Why? I don't find the logic. And I raised this. I've been at two meetings on this so far, and there's another one I'm going to. It's in Tom's River. It's March 6th, so I'll be there. And I'm going to raise the same concerns.
Is that the one run by Rutgers?
I'm sorry?
Is that the one run by Rutgers?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think it is. But I really haven't had the details on it yet. So I will definitely be on with these windmills. It's a good and bad thing. And as far as fishing by them, I've been receiving this. Oh yes, you can. Yes, you can. I would like to have that in writing. Now, see, these are private developers that are putting up these windmills. I would like to have something in writing that says you can. Now,
you can fish around.
You know,
once
in print, you have something to hang your hat on. Instead, oh yeah, and not your head, but when they're up, oh yeah, we wouldn't want you around fishing around them. Okay, and that can change too. I mean, very frankly, just say for argument's sake, we live in a tough world, and ISIS comes up with one of their boats and tries to knock out one of our windmills. Well, that whole thing can change very quickly overnight.
Oh baby,
it's like 9/11 all over again. But I do like to get some kind of confirmation that we can actually do it. And if we can, I mean, that would be a very good fishing source for us.
Very cool.
Right.
All right. Good observations. Robin Scott and Bill Schillingford here in the studio.
Yeah.
And John Toth of the Jersey Coast Anglers is on the line. And, John, I just want to let you know that we have a couple people here who are kind of knowledgeable and about the wind turbines.
Yeah, windmills, yes.
Yeah, and I was just they want to make a couple points. So can you listen in for a minute? Okay, cool.
Hey, John, I've just read a couple reports from people in Rhode Island or scientists in Rhode Island who have reported that the fishing population around the windmills is down dramatically because of the electromagnetic fields that it puts out. And these studies are continuing, and they said that when the windmills shut down, the fishing picks up, but when the windmills are operating, you can't. The fishing is terrible. And Rhode Island has started to stop inputting or installing more windmills as a result.
Well,
yes.
Well,
where did you get that information?
I got it on. I can't think of the individual's name. Do you remember her name?
Megan.
Yeah.
Megan Lamb.
Oh, yeah. Megan,
yes.
Lamb. Yeah.
Okay. Could you do me a favor and send that to me?
Yeah, I'll do it.
You got it.
I'll give you my email address.
Okay. Yeah, give it to us. Oh well. You want to give it over the phone?
This would be very important. There's a meeting that's coming up on this in March. I'd like to have that in my fingers.
Okay.
We're going to have her on the show, John.
Let me give you my telephone number. 732-656-0139. And the email is tothjohn@verizon.net. TOTHJOHN at verizon.net. That would be very, very useful for me at this meeting.
Oh, great.
Because
okay.
The only thing I've been told is the fishing is great. This is the first time I've heard some negative news on that.
Well, we do know that there's, that in the, you know, up till relatively recently, there was some confusion between the oil rigs down in the Gulf. They're not the same as the wind turbines. So,
yes, effect,
yes.
Very
but for a while they were lumped together, and they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else? What do you guys got coming up? You have kind of a schedule here. Robin, did you make a point?
Just one other point, and again, I gleaned this in conversations with Megan, John, but you know we're being sold a bill of goods by the people ramrodding these whole wind farms in, and I have no problems with them on an inland situation. But when we start tampering with our oceans and fisheries, then the hackles go up. But For every kilowatt hour of wind energy that is produced, it requires 1 kilowatt hour of gas to produce it, number one. The electromagnetic cables that come in actually are powerful enough to disorient ships and their systems, so we'll have them operating by compass offshore, which is kind of interesting. The clam fishery, when you were talking about the scallop, and I'm glad you brought it up, you presented everything, pros and cons, so elegantly. The clam fishery that we have, very viable, and as we were talking during the break, Mike was talking about, we're one of the biggest ocean scallop producers in the world. Other countries send their biologists over here to study what we do in order to produce the quality and the quantity that we have. So what I heard when one of those meetings was presented in Atlantic City for about the utility company was it would be 1,000 more jobs. Well, it will eliminate 1,000 jobs to bring in 1,000 jobs in a different industry. And we certainly, I mean, we can't save the world, John, but we can save New Jersey. And our fishery is a viable industry, second biggest in the state after tourism. And I think that we have to get more aggressive about pursuing changes in this whole operation.
But I'm friendly with Jim Logan. You know, we had the commercial people would argue against him, even at some hearings like Bluefish that came up. They don't like what I said, but by the way, I mean they do make their livelihood. We do work together, by the way, Jim Lovegan, with sand mining. So, it's, in other words, they're allies too, so not just enemies.
Yeah.
But they're very concerned about this and very vocal about this clam. And I'm for them. And they say they're going to sue. But there's a lot of with this windmill thing. It's like there's some powerful forces behind it. The governor for one, and then you have money. I mean, these developers want to make some money. The Danish company bought out that company to put up the windmills by Block Island, like with $500 million.
Right.
So the money is a big driving force on this. There's concerns on it, and I'm trying to, and myself and others are trying to, reduce these problems. And I don't know if we can. We'll see, though. We'll try.
Okay. Sounds like you're in there pitching.
Yeah.
Thank you for what you do, John.
Thank you. Okay. Just send me that info, please.
Yeah, we will. All right. That was John Toth, first vice president of the Jersey Coast Anglers. One of the Jersey Coast Anglers, one of the biggest, I guess, fishing clubs in the state. We got any final points, Robin, Bill?
Well, the fight that we have is we've got to get the recreational fishing and the people in the industry more vocal.
Yeah, we got to get them
out. I keep saying that, but you don't see much input, especially in South Jersey. I mean, if you look at the fishing season, the fluke season, extending the fluke season with an 18-inch size limit means we're taking more females out of the population and throwing more dead fish back. Yeah.
Insanity.
It's insanity is right. That's a good word for it.
And then wondering why the population is going down. Well, target all the female breeders. Of course it'll go down.
Yeah.
All right, 1 minute to go.
The fishing shows. I'm in 3 of them. That's what I did. People come up.
Bill and I were going to go off on a tangent about hybrid striped bass. I think we only have 20 seconds to do it. I don't know. That's not going to work. Next show. Next week.
Next, that's for a future.
Okay.
All right, very good, you guys. Thanks for the lively and educational session here.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.